morning, everybody. Thanks for joining me on Minding Your Health, the show that helps you find ways to take back control in issues regarding your mental and your physical health. I'm Roberta Fernandez, a board-certified hypnotist and a certified hypnosis instructor at the Fair Hypnosis Center in Eden Prairie. I use hypnosis to help people succeed where nothing else has worked. And every Saturday morning here at 10 o'clock, I'm with you. Over the next couple of shows, we're going to be talking about performance improvements in sports and in the workplace. You know, we talk a lot about stress on this show, and your ability to manage stress, your self-confidence, your beliefs about yourself impact your performance at home and at work. And today, our focus is going to be on the work environment. When you're not at your best, emotionally, physically, or spiritually, you can have problems with communication, functioning as part of a team, and with conflict. Rising stress levels can lead to burnout, a poor performance review at work, or even getting fired. So I work with clients to help them get to the root of what might be causing their emotional issues. I teach them how to manage their stress and how to improve their confidence. So today we're going to be examining how stress manifests in the workplace because it usually shows up in the form of conflict. This is what we're going to focus on in the show. So my guest today is Karen Black. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you, Robert. I'm glad to be here.
So Karen is the owner of a company called Insight Edge. She's a leadership consultant and a coach, and she works within organizations on team building, conflict resolution, assessment, and executive coaching. And Karen holds master's degrees in management, conflict management, and dispute resolution, and she's got more than 20 years' experience in this field. And I have to say, Karen is one of the first people I met when I moved to Minnesota, and she's one of the best conflict resolution facilitators that I know. So she's perfect to show to talk about how this shows up in the workplace. Karen, tell our audience, if you would, how you got into this.
Well, I had been working in organizations for about 15 years, so I began to see conflict. But the real reason I went back to school to get a master's was because I was really bad at handling conflict in my own life. And I figured if at least I went back and got a degree, I'd get better at handling it in my own life. And then the rest is history, Roberta.
Yeah, I think a lot of careers go that way, right? Therapists become therapists because they need help. And I know I was really bad with money. I became a financial planner many years ago. So we all look to try to fix ourselves,
we
right?
We do, absolutely.
But that's an awesome thing to do, actually, because then we can really relate to our clients, right?
Absolutely.
So let's talk about conflict. How do you define conflict?
Well, I define conflict. I have a textbook definition, but let me give you just a really simple. It's any time you have people coming together that have incompatible needs, desires, or wants, you're going to have conflict.
Right.
And particularly the key word is interdependent, that they cohabitate together, they work together, they interact in some way, because if they're not interdependent, most people won't even think about dealing with the conflict.
Right. And, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking about this as we're talking. We're talking about it in the work environment, but right away, it's like this is at home too.
Absolutely.
It's with our significant others, our spouses, our children, with our parents, with anybody really we come into conflict. So we're going to keep it in the work environment, but this translates into every section of our life, right?
It does.
So now that we've defined conflict, what makes it really important for us to talk about it?
Because it is impacting organizations and individuals in huge ways. I mean, there was a study done by CPP, and they're an assessment company. So if anybody's heard of the Myers-Briggs, they publish them. But they do a number of assessments, and what they found is that 85% of employees deal with conflict on some level. And you know, if they're dealing with it at work, there's probably it's going home with them too, because you can't really separate, as you know, Roberta, home from work. And what they found was in this study is there are three primary reasons that conflict is showing up in work. 49% is about personality clashes and warring egos. And who hasn't experienced those things? You start out the show by talking about stress. 34% is caused by stress. Yep. So it could be stress in the workplace. It could be stress they're having at home. And then 33% is workload. And as you know, people are having to do more and more with less resources.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's you mentioned the stuff that goes home from work and that comes in. You know, I can remember I grew up in an era, I'm aging myself here, but where we were told we could have it all and do everything wonderfully, right? And that you should be able to separate home from work. And even though there are still some companies, I think, that believe that, it's really hard to say, you know, check your home life at the door when you punch in, right?
Yep.
It is always there inside of us. And so sometimes I'm assuming that you see as a consultant that the conflict from at home, the stress, I guess, is really causing the conflict in the workplace. So what are some of the behaviors when people are having conflict that you see in the workplace?
Well, there's a whole cycle that people get into that are called the retaliatory cycle. So you have an event that happens. Mm-hmm. Somebody has some feelings and emotions around it. They start thinking these thoughts like, doesn't this person respect me? What's up with this? Why are they doing this? And then it goes to anger. And, you know, as you know, anger is a normal part of the human experience. And anger isn't so much good or bad. It's what are you doing with that anger?
Right.
And usually when you have anger, it goes underground. So, and then it ends up being behavior. And there are two types of behavior you see acted out in conflict. And one are what we call walkaways. Those are when you're more kind of the flight response. Mm-hmm. So things like avoiding contact, sending emails, you know, I'm not talking to the person at all.
Right.
And then you have the power plays. And both are just as destructive to to increasing conflict. So the other thing are power plays. Things like, I love this one because I've seen it so often, preempting. And what I mean by that is one person goes to a person in position of power and says, here's what happened. This person is doing this to me. And it's called preempting because they're trying to get a heads up on the other person.
Right.
You know, it's a power play, very much so. It's things like getting other people to take sides, you know, impacting reputation. Those kind of things are very much power play. And, you know, I'm guilty of all of them, some walkaways and some power plays.
Right. Well, and I think that, we talked on the last show about the power of connection and how important it is to be connected in your personal and your work life. And for those listeners that have been listening to the show for a while, they can kind of see how all this ties together. Because when you start having those kinds of destructive behaviors, then nothing can flow smoothly in the workforce, especially that taking sides thing, talking behind the back, and it's downhill from then.
Mm-hmm.
So can you give me an example of maybe a recent case or a client that you were called in to mediate this kind of conflict? Like, what was going on there?
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you one of my favorite stories because it was a supervisor and employee. And for over 12 years, they've been working together, and they had conflict.
The whole time?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And the new HR director came in and said, oh, my gosh, we've got to do something, because if we let one or both of them go, we could have some legal costs that we don't want to deal with.
Uh-huh.
So came in, I do what I always do, which is interview each party, because let them kind of express where they are, tell them about the process, build rapport. So when I brought the two of them together, I already had a relationship with each of them. And then I brought them together and put them through a process where I went over all our protocol. One of the things, especially in this case, when you're talking about mediation, is all my job is to facilitate. I do not solve their problem.
Right.
I simply get them to keep talking.
Yeah.
And then we go through the process of each party gets a chance to talk about, and they talked about. And then I have them list some commonalities, because in spite of how much conflict they have or how far apart they are, there are always some commonalities. Well, what was really pivotal for this particular interaction, this mediation, was that the supervisor said, oh my gosh, we are both highly emotional people, and that is truly impacting how we work together. So we were able to go on from there to have the discussion and then create what I call a memorandum of understanding, which is how is my behavior going to change going forward? So each person has to make a commitment to how the behavior is going to change.
And this was a 12-year conflict,
yes,
basically.
Yes.
And how easy was it for those parties to do that?
Well, the first thing the supervisor did when I sat down with him was say, you know what? He needs to be on a performance plan. They don't need to be bringing you in. So I just looked at him and I shook my head and proceeded to ask my questions and explain and not even address that piece. And by the end of it, I mean, even today, I still have a really good relationship with him.
Yeah, and I guess the bottom line from what I'm kind of reading into what you're saying is that perhaps those individuals learned something about themselves.
Yes.
That enabled them to say, oh, wait a minute, I am contributing to this. Because there are always two sides, aren't there?
There are always two sides. It's never just one person.
No, and you hear that. I mean, you see that at work. You see that in the case of a divorce. Mm-hmm. You see that in any kind of a relationship, whether it's personal or business or a parent and a child. There's always contributing factors that come from both parties. And so it's just a matter of stepping back.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that people are comfortable with your process? I would imagine there's resistance at times.
There's resistance initially, mm-hmm. but once I sit with them, I have the conversation, and I bring them together. I think one of the things I'm really good at is creating that space for mm-hmm. them to actually have that conversation.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, when you're feeling conflict, it's not comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And so even the fact that, well, maybe there can be some kind of resolution to this, and I'm sure initially they all want it to be their resolution.
Right, right.
But the fact that maybe I could come to work and not deal with this every day gives them some incentive to participate in that. Would that be true?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Karen, it's about time to go for a break.
Okay.
I just want to remind our listening audience, if you've just tuned in, that we are taking calls today. The number is 952-946-6205. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with Karen Black. She's the owner of Inside Edge, and we're going to be talking about conflict and in the workplace and how it impacts your performance. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Roberta Fernandez, and you're listening to Minding Your Health here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Today, we're talking with Karen Black. Karen is an owner of Inside Edge, and we're talking about conflict in the workplace. Karen, how does conflict impact one's physical and mental well-being?
Well, it absolutely does, and to the point where 50% of all departures, think about this, Roberta, from organizations are due to chronic unresolved conflict.
Wow.
And taking it a step further, of that 50%, 90% of involuntary departures, which are the people that don't really want to go but get asked by the organization to go, are due to chronic unresolved conflict.
Yeah, I would imagine it's personalities. Like you said, I would think that that's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we all come across personalities that just rub us the wrong way for some reason. Usually in hypnosis,
yeah.
I figure that out, right? I figure out what that is. But that's 50% is real. That's staggering, actually.
It is. And so I have a question for you, because
sure.
I know you do work around mm-hmm. the whole area of conflict, working with your hypnosis. What kinds of things are you seeing?
Well, you know, people, the conflict a lot of times is within them.
Yes.
You know, that's kind of where it starts for some people. But it really comes back to this fear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fear of not being right, not being good enough, and inadequacy,
mm-hmm.
Self-esteem issues. It can come from a variety of places. A lot of times it's, you know, what they grew up learning, how their parents dealt with conflict, and what they saw in the house, you know, that it's either good or bad. Mm-hmm. You know, some people, their parents never argued in front of them. So they have no experience in seeing how there's resolution when there's disagreement.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're going to disagree, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's going to happen. Not everybody is always going to be in step with each other. So yeah, I see a lot of reasons. But you can tell, you mentioned earlier anger
mm-hmm.
being at the seat of all of that. You know, anger is an emotion where it's not fair. That's what anger means. And in the workplace, when you have a hierarchical organization, there's a lot of it's not fair feeling, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what's the impact of conflict, not just from an individual perspective, but also the organization? How do you see that playing out?
Well, if you think about a study was done, and 42% of when there's a conflict going on is spent, a manager spends dealing with conflict. So you think they've got a big job to do. They're managing people, and they're taking 42% of their time to really deal with whatever the conflict is. The other thing is they did a Fortune did a study of CEOs, and they found that they spend 20% of their time dealing with conflict. So think about the impact that has on their time. They're very busy people.
Right.
And just what a lot of people don't see in conflict, which I've seen many, many times, is people know when it exists, especially between parties, people, and it impacts the team. And if it's a small organization, it can impact the whole organization. And I'll give you an example. I worked one of the very first mediations. I like to use the word facilitation because mediation is such a legalese word. Was a supervisor and employee that he had hired 9 months earlier. And what happened was when she came to work, she had suggested they try a software program that would help them be more effective. Well, he blew her off. And by the time I got, the CEO said, I can't deal with this. I don't want to deal with this. I'm bringing you in to resolve it, which we did. So, you know, it takes a lot of time. The whole organization and the team was impacted by it. So, you know, lost productivity, people spending time talking about non-work related things, you know, taking sides and all of that.
Yeah. And I know before I became a hypnotist, I was a business consultant.
Yes, you were.
And I was called in to this company. I did a lot of work around organizational change, and they had just been bought by another company.
Oh.
And they were actually very different in their corporate cultures, and they were trying to merge these cultures. And that is another huge source of problems.
Oh, absolutely.
So whether it's a business merger or they hire someone in from another company that was used to working in one kind of culture, coming into something totally different, you know, or maybe getting a new boss within that. So there's so many opportunities for that conflict to arise.
Absolutely.
So we talked a little bit in the last segment about levels of conflict. So does conflict always start out as conflict?
No. And that's a really interesting thing. It may start out as a difference. So let's say, Roberta, you and I are working on a project. And let's say you're analytical, you're detailed, you always cross your T's and dot your I's. Let's say I'm a kind of fly by the seat of my pants kind of gal.
Yep.
So we're working on a project. Already we have a style difference.
Yep.
Now, if we can get to know each other, communicate and work together well, our style difference may not impact the project or whatever we're doing together, working on a team. However, let's say you're very analytical, research. Deadlines are really important. And let's say I start missing a deadline or two.
Right.
And all of a sudden, we've got what we call a dispute. It's a single issue that can be, if dealt with now, can prevent something going into full-fledged conflict. But let's say not only am I now missing deadlines, but let's say I'm not getting all my information because I'm not so much of a researcher. I'm flying by the seat of my pants. And all of a sudden, it becomes a conflict. And when it becomes a conflict, it's so much more than just the conflict. It becomes very intensely identified. People become very personal.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're always on my case, Roberta. You're so rigid. Or you're thinking, Karen, why don't you do your job? Are you incompetent? And so there's a lot of stuff that gets attached to the conflict.
Right. And that goes back to what we were talking earlier when you asked me about what I see.
Yes.
Then it becomes about inadequacy.
Yes.
Or, you know, that not being good enough, or lots of other issues that the person might not even know. It might be something that a learned behavior that they just default to. Mm-hmm. So it gets very complicated is what I'm hearing. Yeah, it gets very complicated.
I have a great example if you want a quick little
example.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Called into an organization by the second in the command, administrative assistant was having difficulty with the CEO. CEO one day had come to her desk and said, hey, I want you to make copies for 30 board members in 30 minutes. Now remember, the meeting had been on the on the board, so everybody knew the meeting was coming up. And that started her into, you know, a dispute, which led to a conflict where pretty soon she thought she wasn't, does he not value me? Does he think I'm incompetent? What's he doing bringing me these things at the last minute? It was interesting. And he had no clue because she was afraid to go to him because she was his executive assistant.
Right. And he's the boss, yes. Right? It's yes. About as high as you can get. And so sometimes that conflict, from what I'm hearing you say, is people's inability to speak up.
Yeah.
To feel strong enough with their own standing. And who knows, that can come from previous experience with that person. Maybe that CEO is always doing this. Mm-hmm. That can get I admire you for doing your job, I have to tell you, because conflict is something that I flee from.
Yeah.
Or I get that deer in the headlights thing,
yes,
where I just get frozen. So it's not, definitely not a strength of mine, but important to have as a skill. So when we come back, Karen, I want to pick up talking a little bit more about these levels of conflict. You'd mentioned retaliatory, power plays, walkaways. I'm a good walkawayer. And I'm sure there's a lot of other dynamics in that too. So for those of you that might have just tuned in, we are taking calls. Feel free to give us a buzz, 952-946-6205. And when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Karen Black from Inside Edge on this wonderful topic. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Roberta Fernandez, and this is Minding Your Health here on AM 950 at 10 o'clock every Saturday morning. Today, we're talking with Karen Black, owner of Inside Edge, about conflict in the workplace. Karen, earlier in the show, you talked a little bit about the kinds or levels of conflict, retaliatory being one. Let's talk a little bit about more about those.
Okay. Well, the retaliatory cycle is really, Roberta, what keeps the conflict going. So an event is triggered. You know, in the last segment, we talked about the executive assistant.
Yeah.
Okay. So what happened is the CEO comes to her, says, I need 30 copies of these documents in 30 minutes for the board meeting. So the first thing she thinks is, doesn't he think I have anything to do? He knew this board meeting was on. So there's some perception of threat there.
Right.
So then what happens is there's the anger. And we talked about how anger.
It's not fair.
Yes. Yeah. Like, you know, what the heck is he doing? So it's not good or bad. It's just, what do you do with it? And a lot of times people just stuff it. And in this case, that's exactly what she did because she was getting ready to walk out the door. And she'd been there like 15 years. Then they act out. And what happens is the acting out turns into power plays and walkaways. Think about it as fight or flight. Power plays are fight.
Yep.
Walkaways. So let me give you some power plays. Preempting, which I mentioned, is getting to somebody in power. If you're a kid at home and you're in a conflict with your sibling, you'll run to your parent first so that you can get your side presented. So when the other kid comes, you know, they've already presented their side, and hopefully the parent is on their side. Getting others to take sides, huge in organizations. Somebody will go around and tell everybody what's going on and say, ain't that awful?
You know, right.
That kind of
or you agree with me, don't
yes,
you?
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. They'll get their mob going. And undermining the person's reputation, you know, talking poorly about them. Threatening, you know, or shouting. And I don't see a lot of hostile gestures. However, I have to admit, I've been in one interaction where there was some shouting and then we had to take a break.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine by the time you get called in, the people involved in it realize that this is serious.
Yes, yes.
You know, that someone higher than me is paying attention, has decided that, you know, it's serious enough to bring in an expert, right?
And spend, yeah.
And, yeah. And I'm guessing they feel that maybe their job is maybe threatened too.
At times, that is
at
so
times,
true.
Yeah.
So then there's the walkaways. And these are, again, avoiding personal contact, withdrawing altogether, withholding information.
Yeah.
Which is always interesting. Not returning messages. That's pretty passive aggressive. Silent treatment. Mm-hmm. Writing emails, and maybe writing the emails in all caps.
Yeah.
And delay giving required support. So if this person needs support and this other person is angry, they don't do that.
Yeah.
I have an example, great example. So I was called into an organization. These two individuals sat probably about a table's length, an 8-foot table's length away from each other for 2.5 years. They did not talk to each other or acknowledge each other. And think about it. They were an 8-foot table apart, worked in the same department.
Wow. Yeah, and so you can see how this can really add dysfunction
yes.
to the organization.
Yes.
And maybe it doesn't, you know, shut things down. It's not that harmful. But one has to imagine, you know, if this wasn't the case, what could the productivity be? What could the results have been had these people been working more coherently together?
Absolutely.
So you had mentioned while we were on the break some other dynamics that come into play.
Absolutely. There may already, anytime you have a team or individuals that are having trouble, there may be some dynamics going on. So example, things like relationship problems. They don't trust each other. They don't communicate. They have different styles. So those, and it can be in the workplace or it can even be in the family or with friends or with anyone. So there can already be relationship problems. There can be data problems. And data problems are really things like, I don't have the right data. I don't have any data or I have inaccurate data. And one of the things that's so fascinating to me, when people don't have the right data, they make things up. I'm sure you see that all the time in your hypnosis.
I do. Yes.
I know.
Well, that's our conscious need.
Yeah.
So our logical analytical mind has to come up with a reason for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't have that truth, mm-hmm. if we don't have the data, we'll take a little bit of what we know to be the truth or what we think is the mm-hmm. truth, and we'll run with that. And we will form our whole expectations around that. And so you end up with something, and I don't know if you've ever been involved in that, but where two parties sit down that have been in conflict and they're so far off base because they've made assumptions.
Absolutely.
Right?
Happens all the time.
Yeah.
And then one of the things I've learned over the years, Roberta, with is people, when conflict really gets to that really dramatic place, it's because people don't feel heard. If people had truly felt heard early on, maybe still hadn't gotten what they wanted, but if they had felt heard or somebody had addressed what they were saying, it may never have gotten there.
Right. You know, last week, I know you know Vikas Narula.
I do, yes.
He was on the show and we were talking about the power of connection. And I led that segment by talking about Brené Brown.
Yes.
And how she believes in her research, she's found that every human has this incredible need to feel connected, to belong. And part of that is being heard mm-hmm. because that's where we feel we have value.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would imagine that in a lot of conflict, that's probably a core principle or at the cause of everything. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
I would. That at least keeps it stirred up because somebody did not feel heard. Absolutely.
Right, right. And it's not so much about, a lot of times it we'll go to this place, well, they just have this big ego. That's really not what it is at all.
Mm-hmm.
It is about being valued and feeling that you have worth.
Yes.
And that you're contributing. Because we talked a lot about purpose and how the power of purpose was so important.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't feel that getting up and going to that workplace every day is of value to anybody, then that just starts eroding it right at the base, doesn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So in the culture then,
yes.
I think that's really important for those people at the top that are shaping that corporate culture to really be aware of this.
Well, and piggybacking on that, Roberta, is the leadership of an organization sets the culture of how people deal with conflict.
Right.
If they're modeling it, if they've got processes in place to deal with it, you know, that is really healthy. In fact, the Mediation Training Institute in Eckerd College did a study and found out that leaders that had conflict resolution skills were perceived to be better leaders and more promotable.
Oh, interesting.
It is.
Yeah. And do you find from your experience in dealing with leaders, do you feel that they have a lot of experience or training in that?
No. Because the other thing is, you know, I kind of like studies occasionally, but there's a study, an assessment company in Canada did a study, and they found that people felt that it was very important or critical that leaders had these skills.
Mm-hmm.
What they found is it was 300 HR directors that very few people were either somewhat or didn't have the skills at all. It was like 81% of them did either not have the skills or only had some skill in dealing with it.
Right. And I think what happens is that's just kind of the way things work. When Vikas, I'll go back to him, we were talking about that hierarchical organization. We would think that the big influencers are at the top, because they're at the top because they have all these skills. Mm-hmm. But that just isn't the case.
That is true, because they have as much fear sometimes, and they can avoid conflict as much as anyone.
Yeah, we're human, right?
We are.
Yeah. And I think the higher up the ladder you get, the more pressure there is. Because that's an assumption that everybody makes. Well, if you're the CEO or if you're the vice president or whatever that position is, that you're expected to have these skills and to know all these things, when that's just not always the case.
It's true.
Yeah. So how do
you want me to finish going on the dynamic?
Okay, yeah, sorry about that. Yeah.
That's okay. So we talked about relationship problems. We talked about data problems. There's also value differences. So if I'm in a working environment and you want what's for the good of the company and my focus is being promoted, you can see right there we may have a value difference in terms of how we interact.
Right.
Now, there's a fourth dynamic that is created by the organization that's really interesting. It's called structural problems. And have you ever worked for two bosses?
I have not, no.
Okay. Well, it's working for two bosses where you're getting a different set of instructions. It's not having clear roles and responsibilities.
Yeah. Who do I go to?
Yes. Yeah. It's and also not really knowing what your job is about, but they're saying, just go do your job. Well, you're going, what is my job? There may be policies. So this is an inherent and is created by the organization.
Yeah, I can see where that can be a huge issue. And I can also think of multiple situations where that comes into play, especially in really large organizations that are very siloed, but someone may have to report across those silos where their procedures and their policies are very different.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that can get – and then you're left thinking, hey, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing. So, yeah, that can be really
And you can feel pulled.
Right.
The last one, which is really interesting, and I'm going to use you and I as an example. So we're working on a project again. You want it to go really well because you want the company to look good in the, you know, to really look good. I want to do well because I want to get a promotion. So it's why I want what I want. And right there you can see we may have some built-in conflict if
That's
our
right.
interests are different.
Yeah, and in all of life, people come at things from such different perspectives.
They do.
And they view things through different lenses. And that's what makes this world interesting and rich and wonderful, but I can definitely see where that causes this conflict. So how do people begin that conversation to fixing this? So before they call you in, Karen, what are some of the steps that they can take?
Well, I am a big believer in individuals having that first one-on-one conversation. And it doesn't matter if it's in your personal life or if it's in your professional life. And so I have some tips that I think is helpful. First of all, before you invite somebody into the conversation, conflict resolution is like a muscle. The more you use it, the better you'll get at it, the less fearful it becomes, and the easier it is, and the better you'll feel about yourself.
Right.
Because you're using it. So the first thing I always say is prepare. Try to sit down, think about it from the other person's side, what they might do. And then set up a neutral location. Because let's say we're in the workplace. If I go into your office, I can feel like that's a power.
Right.
A power thing,
right.
Unequal balance of power. So set up a neutral location. And the same is true personally. You know, maybe if it's a family issue, you know, get out of the house, go somewhere, go for a walk, do whatever. Then you might want to start by setting up some ground rules, like let's have an honest conversation. When I mediate or facilitate, I use really specific guidelines. And then be aware of power plays and walkaways. The person you're talking to may not, but at least you be aware of them and not use them.
Right.
And you can even educate the other person as to, hey, let's not, you know, yell, call names, let's keep it really civil, that kind of thing.
Right. And if you do have a person on the other side of the table that wants to walk away, then you can say, wait, you know, don't walk away from this. We can't settle it if you're not here, right? And be understanding, be that bigger person, right?
Absolutely.
And reach out. So when we come back, I want to continue talking about, you know, how do we solve some of these problems on our own so that we don't let them escalate into that to that point where we have to call in that third party. Mm-hmm. And the same in our personal relationships, right? Before we get to that divorce stage or whatever it is, we want to learn how to dial it down a little bit before it gets out of control. So I'm here with Karen Black. We're going to be back in just a few moments after this commercial break talking about how to solve conflict. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Roberta Fernandez, and we're here with Karen Black, owner of Inside Edge, talking about conflict in the workplace. This definitely affects our physical and mental health. We were talking about solutions to some of this. Mm-hmm. How do we ward off things escalating where we have to call you in?
Well, conflict is nothing more than a call to communicate. And if you can go into the conversation knowing I'm just communicating. So let me continue on kind of the walk.
Sure.
Okay, so once you get each person together, each participant shares. And normally when I invite somebody to the conversation, so if I were inviting you to have a conversation, Roberta, I'd let you go first.
Right.
And I'd say, tell me what you think is happening. I'd ask some really good open-ended questions. And then what I would do after you got done is I would summarize what I heard to make sure I could ask questions and just summarize. At that point, it's not time for debate. It's time to flesh out where everybody is with the issue. And then after you got done, I would say, you know, how open are you to me sharing where I am? And nobody's ever said to me, no, you can't share. So then I share. And then I ask the person, if they don't summarize intuitively, I ask them, so what did you hear me say, to make sure that they heard me?
Right.
Once then we begin the conversation about how do we work through these issues, and we talk until a breakthrough occurs. And I know when a breakthrough has occurred, either in a work conversation or even in a personal conversation, when people start to have conciliatory gestures and their statements of vulnerability. And I know Brené Brown talks a lot about vulnerability, but they're things like apologizing. I'm sorry, Roberta, I missed all those deadlines. I don't know what I was thinking. They're like owning responsibility. Yep,
right.
I did that. It's conceding. You were absolutely right when you called me out on that. Things like self-disclosure. You know, I was going through a really bad time, and this series of things happened in my personal life that really I brought to work. Things like expressing positive outcome. I talked about the executive and his administrative assistant. When we were in the conversation and she said to him, you know, I really like working with you, I knew we were on our way to solving the issue. And last but not least is initiating what's called both gain. How can we work together going forward so we don't have to get to quite this place again? I mean, there's always, will probably be conflict, but how do we work through it? So then what, just a couple tips for those of you out there is, you know, listen. Make sure you summarize, either by paraphrasing in your own words or reflecting back their words.
Yeah,
you
know? And I think the listening piece is really key here, because so many times when we are faced with conflict, I know you get into that situation, you're finally going to talk, and you're not hearing what the other person is saying because you're too busy thinking about what you're going to say. Mm-hmm. Or you'll hear a piece of it and you'll be like, oh, I know how I'm going to respond to that.
Yes.
And then you miss what comes after that, right?
Yes.
So taking that time to be present.
Yes.
And to really listen.
Absolutely.
Before you chime in with your two cents.
Absolutely. And the other thing is to ask good open-ended questions. What, when, where, how, when you're listening to the other person, to flesh out all the information. And then in some cases, you may want to write down, maybe in a personal interaction, you may not do that, but in sometimes you may want to write down, I commit to doing this. And, you know, Roberta, you might say, I commit to doing this. And last but not least, follow up. Most people don't go around, like, say, maybe a week, 2 weeks, a month, follow back up and say, how are we doing with this? I know we had this great conversation. How are we doing? And kind of evaluate.
Right. And I think, you know, listening to you, my kind of takeaway on this is that there's just way too many things in an environment, home or work, that are opportunities for conflict.
Absolutely.
It is our awareness of that potential that can ward off the majority of them. And I think you're right. It is all about communication. And usually when there's problems in any kind of a relationship, it's because we're not communicating effectively. Maybe we think we aren't going to be heard, so we make an assumption, I'm not even going to try.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And that happens all the time, too. How do you know when you need help with this?
Well, if the conflict's been going on 6 months or longer,
Okay.
People can't get past their biases, their stereotypes. You know, there's a lot of misperceptions, and it's a really emotionally charged situation that they haven't been able to resolve.
Right, right. And how does fear come into that?
Oh, absolutely. Most people don't get up in the morning and go, oh my goodness, I can't wait to get to work and have conflict, or I can't wait to have a conflict with my significant other or somebody in my family. I mean, I think for people, especially certain styles, it's scarier than others. But I know very few people who every day get up and go, I can't wait to have conflict and deal with it.
Yeah, yeah. I know. It's just not a comfortable situation. I mean, I have met a few individuals that seem to thrive on it.
Yes.
Yeah, they seem to thrive on it. And typically those people are people who are actually very insecure. Mm-hmm. But that's their persona, right? And that's how they mask it all. Fear is huge.
And thriving on it or being addressing it doesn't mean they're addressing it in a way that honors the other person.
Correct.
Because it's really – and I have a couple just final tips.
Sure.
First of all, you got to go in believing the conflict can resolve. If you don't think it can be resolved, wait until you get there. Leave your ego at the door. Very important. Listen from the other person's perspective. You just brought that up again. Check for understanding regularly. Am I really hearing what you're saying, Roberta? And avoid walkaways and power plays. And if you can try to do some of those things and use this structure, you're going to have some success. You are.
Absolutely. And I loved what you said earlier, too, about, you know, or I guess you didn't say it, but I assumed from this, that assumption piece is a huge problem, I would think.
Absolutely.
You know, I was involved in a conflict one time when I left a business that I owned, and I recently had an opportunity to revisit that. And to say, you know, I'm just so sorry for how things worked out. I was just in a bad place. And, you know, at that moment, that other person didn't let me off the hook with my apology. And it just, it's very interesting how we do that. And that's ego. That's our need, right? That we weren't heard, and so I'm going to make you pay.
Yes.
So it's really important to kind of take that out of the equation as much as possible when someone is making that conciliatory gesture.
Absolutely.
So Karen, any last words you want to say before you tell people how we get in touch with you?
Everyone out there who's listening today, I encourage you to address those conflicts. It's not going to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. It may not even be pretty initially, but at least get out there and try to use some of the tips we've shared with you today, because they do work. I use them myself.
So how do people get in touch with you, Karen?
Well, I have a website, www.insight-edge.com. If you have the insight, you have the edge. Or you can email me, Karen@insight-edge.com.
Awesome. Karen, thanks for coming and sharing your expertise. It was great to have you here today.
It was fun. Thank you, Roberta, for inviting me.
Oh, you're so welcome. And I want to thank everybody in our listening audience for joining us. I'm Roberta Fernandez, a board-certified hypnotist at the FAIR Hypnosis Center. And you can reach me at fairhypnosis.com. That's F-A-R-E, hypnosis.com. I'm right here in Eden Prairie and would love to chat with you about how you can improve your performance. And I'm really excited next week. You know, the weather's getting nice out there. Everything's nice and green. I want to let you all know I have a workshop on May 16th for all the golfers. And next week, my guest is John Weir. John is a fellow hypnotist, a colleague of mine, and John works with professional golfers. So he's going to be here giving tips on how you can shave a few strokes off your game and ideas that really apply to anybody who wants to improve their sports performance. So this is a great show. I encourage all of you not to miss it. Thanks for joining us, and everybody have a mindful week.